I would like to return now to the mechanics of the process of nonviolent communication. But before doing so, I would like to remind you that the mechanics, without the consciousness of why we are applying them, is not nonviolent communication. A woman came back the second day of a workshop, and she said to me, "It didn't work." I said, "Could you tell me what you're referring to?" She said, "I went home last night, and I expressed myself using nonviolent communication to my oldest son. I noticed that he didn't do some work that I wanted him to do, and so I expressed myself. I told him what was alive in me. I told him what I would like him to do." And I said, "Yes," and she told me how she said this, and she had applied the mechanics very well. She had clearly communicated what was alive in her without any criticism of him. She did say clearly what she wanted. I said, "Well, that's what the mechanics are that we've been studying. What's the problem?" She said, "He didn't do it." "Ah," I said, "I can see I didn't make clear that we have to have a different intention than that." She said, "What do you mean?" I said, "It's never our intention in using nonviolent communication to get people to do what we want them to do." She said, "Oh, so I'm just supposed to be permissive and let him do whatever he wants to do?" "No, that's not our intention either, to deny our own needs or to leave things go." I had to remind her that the intention is to create the quality of connection necessary for everyone's needs to get met compassionately. So let's keep that in mind now as we look at some of the basic mechanics of the process of nonviolent communication. I said earlier that we want to be able to express what's alive in us, and at times this requires letting people know exactly what they're doing that is either meeting our needs or is not meeting our needs. In other words, to make a clear observation of their actions, and we want to do this without mixing in any evaluations. Observations are an important element in nonviolent communication. However, when we mix up observation and evaluation, we decrease the likelihood that others will hear our intended message. Instead, they're apt to hear criticism and thus resist what we're saying. Now, I hope you don't hear from this that I'm suggesting that we give up evaluating the other person. No, we need to judge people's behavior. We need to judge our behavior and others continually about whether it's serving life or not. What I'm saying now is let's not mix up observation and evaluation. Nonviolent communication is a process language that discourages static generalizations. Instead, the observations that I will recommend that we make are based on observations specific to time and context. The Indian philosopher Jaddu Krishnamurti once remarked that observing without evaluating is the highest form of human intelligence. When I first read this statement, I couldn't quite understand why he thought this was so important. Then I realized that I had trouble doing this, and I also recalled studies that I had read in university about dangerous forms of thinking, such as racism, sexism, anti-Semitism, and how people who think in that way cannot make this separation between observation and evaluation. They mix up their interpretations with facts. An example of how not being able to make clear observations gets in the way of our resolving our differences peacefully occurred one time when I was working with an elementary school staff. This staff was having a lot of problems communicating with their principal. They didn't like working with him. The tension in the school was so great that parents were making complaints about the atmosphere in the school, so the superintendent asked if I could help out, and the plan was I would meet first with the staff and find out what was bothering them and then get them together with the administrator. So in the time that I was with the teachers, I asked them this question to begin with. I said, "It's been brought to my attention that you and the school administrator are not getting along too well. And it would help me to contribute to getting things working better if you could tell me specifically what is he doing or not doing that's difficult for you to live with." So I was asking them for clear observations. What is he doing or not doing? But instead of getting the answer to my question, I got an analysis back from one of the teachers. When I asked, what does the administrator do? He said, he has a big mouth. Notice I didn't ask him, what size mouth does the administrator have? I asked him what the administrator did. I pointed out this discrepancy between my question and his answer and asked him if he could be more specific, what the administrator did that he was referring to as having a big mouth. He couldn't do it. Everything that came to him was a criticism, analysis, judgment of the administrator. A teacher nearby, seeing him struggle with this, says, well, I know what he's talking about. I said, well, fine, help him out. What does the administrator do? And this second person said, he talks too much. I said, I'd like you to see that I would say that talks too much is another evaluation. It's not an observable behavior. It's mixing in what he does with how you interpret it. I'm confident we'll be able to communicate a lot better if we can begin communication with him by being specific. What does he do that makes it hard for you to be around him? Another teacher said, he wants to be the center of attention all the time. No, that's telling me what you guess he wants. Even if it's accurate, it's a diagnosis. It's not a description of what he does. Another teacher said, well, he thinks he's the only one that has anything worth saying. I said, again, there's another diagnosis. One of the teachers then said, boy, that's hard to do. And then I quoted to them the quote I just gave about Krishnamurti, saying how hard it is, given how we've been programmed to think, to keep separate observation and evaluation. With my help, they finally came up with some observations, one of which was this, that during their weekly staff meetings, that no matter what was on the schedule, he would relate it to war experiences he had had, he would tell childhood experiences and other stories, and as a result, the staff meetings lasted at least 20 minutes longer than they were scheduled. I said, has anyone ever called this to his attention, that specific behavior? And they could see immediately that when they had tried to talk to him about this, they had mixed in words like talks too much and so forth, and he got defensive when they did that. So I suggested we meet with him, and they try to be specific in this meeting about what he does that they don't like. When we did get together for the meeting, I saw rather quickly what they were talking about, because no matter what seemed to come up, the administrator would start to say, that reminds me of a time, and he would go on and start to tell some stories, and I was waiting for the staff to confront him with what we had talked about, that they bring this to his attention, that when he does this, it didn't meet their needs. But instead of people communicating verbally with him, I saw a lot of nonverbal communication going on. People rolled their eyes and looked at each other, poked each other in the ribs as though to communicate their egos again. And they looked at their watches and yawned, and finally I said, isn't somebody going to say something? There was a painful silence for a moment, and then the gentleman who spoke up in our first meeting looked at the administrator and said, you have a big mouth. So I obviously hadn't been clear about how to express clear observations and not mix them up with evaluations. But with my help, they did clearly let him know what he did that they didn't like, and he was very glad to get that information. He was just unaware that that was bothering people to this degree. Now, let me give you some other examples of what happens when we mix up these two things. For example, the use of the verb to be without indication that the evaluator accepts responsibility for the evaluation is an example of this. For example, if someone says, you're too generous. If we were to separate observation and evaluation, this might sound like this. When I see you give all your lunch money to others, I think you are being too generous. Now that at least separates observation and evaluation. I'll later suggest, however, that instead of telling people what we think of them, it would be more powerful to tell them what our needs are that aren't being met. Another kind of confusion of observation and evaluation is when we use verbs with evaluative connotations, like if we say, Doug procrastinates. If we separate observation from evaluation, it might sound like this. Doug only studies for exams the night before. Another confusion of observation and evaluation comes with the implication that one's inferences about another person's thoughts, feelings, intentions, or desires are the only ones possible. For example, if we say about somebody, she won't get her work in. If we separate observation from evaluation, that might sound like this. I don't think she'll get her work in. Or we just make a quote. She said, I won't get my work in. Another confusion of observation and evaluation is when we see a confusion of prediction with certainty. That might sound like this. If you don't eat balanced meals, your health will be impaired. Separating observation from evaluation, we might say, if you don't eat balanced meals, I fear that your health may be impaired. That would sound like this. Minorities don't take care of their property. That would be said this way if we separate observation and evaluation. I've not seen the minority family living next door to me shovel the snow on their sidewalk. Another confusion comes from the use of words denoting ability without indicating that an evaluation is being made. That might sound like this. Hank Smith is a poor soccer player. Separating observation and evaluation, it might sound like Hank Smith has not scored a goal in 20 games. And then we have the use of adverb and adjectives in ways that do not signify an evaluation has been made. That would sound like Jim is ugly. If we say it in harmony with nonviolent communication, we might say Jim's looks don't appeal to me. Sometimes the words always, never, ever, and so forth get us into trouble when they're used as exaggerations. For example, if we say to somebody, you're always busy. I think we could say that better by saying, as often as when I want to talk to you, you tell me you're busy, I get frustrated. Or if we say to somebody, she's never there when she's needed, I think it would be more accurate to say there's been several times recently when I have called upon her and she wasn't available. When these words always and never are used as exaggeration, they often provoke defensiveness rather than compassion. Similarly, words like frequently and seldom can communicate the same confusion. So if you say, you seldom do what I want, I think it would be more accurate to say, the last three times I initiated an activity, you said you didn't want to do it. Or instead of, he frequently comes over, he comes over at least three times a week.